Yeah, on the record.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Vamp Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And today, we are talking with RPG luminary, Chuck Rice. How you doing, Chuck?
Good. You forgot Panamanian Strongman. I also like to go by that.
And you are a board game magnate these days, aren't you?
Sure.
Board game magnate?
If we're defining magnate as a minor marketing functionary for a very large company, sure.
Fair enough. And Chuck has written a new game called After Zombies that we're going to be talking about, but let's introduce the rest of our roundtable first. Next to Chuck on my Skype window is Walt Rebillard.
I am not a British Time Lord.
Walt was not even considered for the next role of Doctor Who, and he's a little bit peeved about that. But
we won't discuss it. It's a thing.
Time will heal all wounds. Ah! Horrible pun. And next is Mr. John Gibbons.
Hi, guys. Everyone okay?
Doing all right, John. Thanks for joining us. And you are the primary artist on After Zombies, correct?
I am indeed, yes. I'll be doing the little colorful, painterly things inside the pages of the book.
And hey, before we get too far, people should go to the After Zombies page on Facebook right now and check out some of the art that John has already done for that. I saw the new banner you had on the After Zombies page on Facebook, but just the teeth.
Ah, yes. Gnarly, that, isn't it? Gnarly.
That was fucked up, man.
It was, it worked out better than I wanted it to.
Look, you're not supposed to feel comfortable when you're on the After Zombies page, all right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to be a little on edge.
Just help me out here. What is the exact URL so I can give it to our...
It is... Let me see. I want to say facebook.com/AZAfterZombies.
Okay, because when I did a search on Facebook zombie group, boy, did a whole lot.
I bet it did.
It is AZ After Zombies, all one word.
Okay. So facebook.com/AZAfterZombies.
Yes. I got up now, staring those teeth right in the teeth.
Yeah, good. I don't know. Yeah, that's... Damn, those are some nice teeth, John. That's
nice, aren't they? Yeah, well, I know you guys over there think all British people have got teeth like that, so I thought I'd better put it on the website. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that kind of... It really evokes the kind of...
Yeah.
B-movie zombie feel right off the bat.
Yeah, because, from a creative art type point of view, I want this book to look mean. You know, I want there to be lots of blood and gore. I want you to look at a zombie and think, I do not want to be anywhere near that.
Yes, when John and I first started talking about this, he was like, so, you know, I would want this book to be disturbing, right? And I'm like, yes, thank you, yes.
So why don't we, you know, we're talking about the inspirations and the vibe and the feel you want for the book. What made you want to do a zombies book? Because you're a guy who's known for martial arts, the Blood and Fist series, which was wildly successful back in D20 boom days, and superheroes and military stuff. This seems like a little bit of departure from your usual wheelhouse.
It is, yeah. I was actually that guy that was kind of, you know, stomping his foot on the ground and going, zombies are dumb. Why are people talking about zombies? And then I actually started to... A friend of mine handed me the first Walking Dead trade and said, look, just read it. It's 6 comic issues. If you don't like it, then just tell me to shut up and I'll never bring it up again. And I did, and it kind of sucked me in. And then I read some novels. I would say when I officially went down the rabbit hole and started thinking about this game, I read a book called Day by Day Armageddon, which is written by... a military officer in the style of a diary. Like on New Year's Eve, he makes a resolution to keep a diary, and that's when everything starts to go to hell. And he's very much a survivalist in the sense that, you know, he's one of these guys that has solar panels on his roof, and he's got an AR-15 and 2,000 rounds of ammunition sitting in his house. And that really kind of grounded take on it, and then Walking Dead has the whole, it's really more about the relationships between the characters with zombies kind of in the background. So you put those two together, and that really kind of set me down this road.
What's your favorite zombie novel?
I think in terms of the game, I'm gonna go with Day by Day Armageddon. It is very much a book that gets things right in terms of things you'd have to think of to survive. In terms of probably the best written book, I'd probably go with World War Z, because that actually has some literary heft to it. Now, don't hold the movie against it.
Day by Day Armageddon is by J.L. Bourne, and of course, World War Z is by Max Brooks, son of the famous comedian Mel Brooks. I listened to the audiobook for World War Z a lot because I had a long commute when it came out, and I liked it. It's most of the book I thought was dealing with logistics and just some of the organizational and planning, you know, details.
Yes. Well, that's why I say, like, in a lot of ways, it's not a good book to read for game inspiration. But I also really, when he talks about military combat, that book really sets my teeth on edge. But in terms of being a really awesome riff on Studs Terkel's The Good War, then you have to say it's probably the best written book. But yeah, Day by Day Armageddon is just good fun.
Yeah, some of the basically has them going back to old Civil War, or maybe even Napoleonic tactics for fighting zombies.
Yeah, which is total balderdash.
Mm. Okay, well, you and John are both military men. Either one or both of you guys have ever speculated on how you would fight a zombie apocalypse?
John, you want to go first?
I've already got my route planned out. I think most people who are role players, you know, have already thought about the zombie apocalypse. But off the coast, the southern coast of England, there's a lighthouse, a famous lighthouse. You know, and I'm thinking that's probably the best place to be. You know, so you're in the middle of the ocean, nothing can get to you. You can only get there by boat. There's only one door in. You could have some nice MGs and lights mounted at the top of the lighthouse. You know, I could survive a long time in a place like that.
John sounds like he's got his bug out bag already.
It's there. It's under my bed, ready to go. Yeah, I mean, I think I'd be a bit of a loner type character, really. I think I'd avoid, you know, joining a large society, and you know, I just think you'd just be food for the zombies.
So, Walt, have you thought about this?
I actually have my parang sitting right here. So, for those who don't know, a parang is a Filipino machete that looks like a leaf. It's got a lot of heft to it, and it, I'm pretty sure it would do what it needed to. But I mean, as far as like an actual zombie plan, I try not to. I don't know. My military experience has been fairly dirty and fairly involved. So you know, as far as like, I would fight them the same way that I would fight, you know, people. Only I'd be more relaxed about it because I could do it from a roof.
And don't they say the plan only lasts until the first contact with the enemy, don't they? So no matter what you plan, it's bound to go wrong anyway. So.
Pretty much. I mean, you know, it's going to last until first contact and the last bullet, you know, you fired. So I mean, you know, you can only stay up on that roof so long as the food, water, and ammunition lasts.
Oh, see, I think that's a bit pessimistic, Walt.
Well, after that, I have the parang. You know, I can go and, you know, hit the mountains, you know, grab my trusty dog, hit the mountains, and, you know, maybe go someplace where the zombies aren't going to be, you know, because they're not going to climb rocks to, you know, or steep cliff faces to come get me unless, you know, you get some variation zombies like in games like Left 4 Dead or, you know, in Peter Klein's book, X-Heroes, you know, you got some zombies that can do some creepy stuff. So, you know, if it's just fairly straightforward zombies, you know, you guys can have the cities. I'll go someplace nice and rural.
Yeah. But I think it's like when you talk about like zombies climbing and stuff. And I mean, and one thing I know Walking Dead has started to delve into it, because actually after a bit, zombies would slowly just rot away, wouldn't they? Eventually. You know, eventually they'd just be skeletons and bones, and then what would they be able to do? I don't know. I mean, Chuck, what have you sort of looked at that in the book at all? Are there rules around that? You know, do zombies degrade as such?
Right. Well, the nature of the book is, because I always am a bit of a grognard, and so I hate it when books get too specific and try to hem me in. So I'm actually coming up with, I'm working on the GM section right now, and I'm giving the potential game master a list of rules I think that he needs to set in stone before the campaign begins. And one of them is definitely how much do zombies need their musculature on their bodies? Like, do they, you know, for example, if you cut off a hand, could it just continue to move around? Because honestly, why couldn't it? Now, obviously, it doesn't work that way in The Walking Dead, but, you know, you might not be trying to emulate The Walking Dead. Or what happens after a hard freeze?
Well, yeah, so, that was one of the in World War Z. Every winter got quiet because, well, right. If you were far north enough, because the zombies were frozen.
Right.
So, yeah. Now, one thing they pointed out, and, well, I mean, less so in World War Z, but definitely in Walking Dead, is, you know, after a point, your biggest enemy is other survivors.
Oh, sure. And if you definitely, now in After Zombies, I definitely have a wide variety of zombie monsters. But yeah, the most dangerous thing you're going to fight is another person, because, you know, I have I have the typical slow zombie that I call a shambler in the game. And then I have, fast zombies, because obviously that, you know, there are sometimes in certain zombie fiction, like, what is it? 30 days later,
28 days later, yeah.
80 days later. Okay. Yeah. 20. So 50 days after that, you have, you know, you have the fast zombies, and in the World War Z movie, obviously they were fast. But even then, you know, there's nothing like, you know, that doesn't compare to a person with a rifle shooting at you from 600 yards away.
Yeah.
Well, there's not many things that will save you from a person shooting at you with a rifle from 600 yards
away. Yeah. Matter of fact, one of the toughest fights my playtesters had was they walked into this guy's house who was inclined to just open up on them with a shotgun rather than, you know, talk to them and find out that they were nice, friendly folk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's not a bad policy, you know, at the end of the world. So how is this different from other post-apocalyptic games that you've worked on or played?
Well, it has a couple of different things, I would say, from a traditional RPG. One of them is that your combat ability and your level are not related. Now, this is a thing that is in most RPGs, level is basically synonymous with how well do you fight. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a game where at the start of the game, like when you're a day zero character, you will you could be a housewife who has never touched a gun in her life, or you could be, you know, a hard-bitten Iraq war veteran. And so what I actually did was I made combat ability an ability score. And it's ability scores are largely based on your background. So if you're from a military background or a criminal background, you are going to start with a much greater combat ability than someone who, say, was a college professor. And as you gain levels, assuming the college professor and the soldier use the experience they gain to just work on their combat ability, the soldier is always going to be ahead, generally speaking.
Okay, cool. Well, tell us, first quick question about Walking Dead. I just keep thinking of this one that the show has mentioned. Romero actually refused to direct an episode.
Yeah, he doesn't think it's political enough, I guess.
Oh. Yeah.
I had heard he said it was basically a soap opera with zombies.
Well, it is, ultimately, I think. I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to argue. I mean, if you like the personal relationships and what they're going, it's, you know, it's engaging. But
although, in my opinion, you can draw a straight line from Romero to Kirkman. Like the movies and the TV show, to me, feel like they're in the same universe. Much more so, for example, you can't just draw a line from Romero to World War Z, in my opinion.
Yeah, because they weren't in World War Z. I always found I didn't really relate to them as being zombies. Because they weren't almost like your normal, what you've been brought up to believe zombie-like, which are all pretty much based on Romero's films, aren't we? Let's face it. Mm. All of our modern take on what we believe a zombie is based on that guy's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were just undead humans.
Yeah, they were all... It reminded me more of, say, something like... what's the Will Smith one? God.
I Am Legend.
Yeah, I Am Legend. Yeah, it was almost like that. It was, to my mind, it was rather than being like these undead, you know, zombies, they were almost like this breed, if you know what I mean. That's the impression I got, rightly or wrongly, from the...
So, I would, tell us about the, is there an implied setting for the game, or is it, are there some options? Tell us about that.
Yeah, as I said, in the Game Master section, I basically say, okay, you're really going to need to set rules for two things before you start. And I really think within the realm of zombie fiction, that's really all you need to do. And that might seem a bit simplistic, but I think the two things you really need to decide how they're going to work in your game are, how does the virus work?
Yeah.
Whatever it is that causes all this. And then how do the zombies themselves work? And again, that comes to, you know, how dependent on their body are they? If they do they need to eat? Do they lose energy? Do they get slower and sluggish if they don't eat regularly? Do they, you know, what about a zombie that just walks into the Atlantic Ocean? Can he just then walk ashore in France and still be fine? You know, and different zombie fictions have kind of had their own take on this. Now, I am going to do a campaign of my own, but mostly for logistical reasons, I think I'm going to do that as something separate down the line, because I have a lot of ideas. Obviously, I've been playtesting the game for about 9 months now, almost 10 months. You know, I've got a lot of campaign material of my own in the bank, but that was a whole nother chapter, and it was starting to look like it was going to be a big chapter. And you know, this book needs to come out. Like, the train needs to leave the station. So I had to put a cap on it.
So when do you think that's going to happen?
When is it going to leave the station? It's going to be written probably November. And then, you know, I know John has some stuff that he needs to clear up. So, you know.
Yeah, I've kind of like... I've got a schedule in front of me which is due to end very, very soon, and then it's going to be full steam ahead, completely going for onto AZ. But you know, I said to Chuck from day one, though, I don't want to rush the art. You know, I don't want to sit down and go, right, okay, I'm going to do, you know, 20 interior images, I'm going to get them knocked up in 2 months, whatever. You know, I want to spend time on this, and I want to create some startling, realistic art. And to do that, you know, It needs time. Chuck's spent months and months and months, if not a couple of years, developing this, but it's only been thrown my way, hasn't it, Chuck, literally in the past, you know, past month or two, really.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in a way kind of wrestling with my own nature here, because as you know, you guys know, I'm, you know, I used to turn books around in a couple months.
Yeah.
And so to me, this process feels stupidly long, but I really don't have a schedule. You know, I have a day job. I can pay my bills. This book can come out when I can be like a, you know, what's his name? The video game guy who used to just always say when it's done, when people would ask him when a game was coming out.
And that's a smart way to be. That's, you know, some of the more successful companies. Let's talk about Evil Hat. You know, they don't have release dates. We'll put it out when it's done, so we're not going to piss people off if we keep saying it's not done yet. So, yeah, this is pretty good.
You know, I mean, if you're not constrained by financial situations, you know, why right. rush? You know, simple as that. You know what I mean? Yeah, if you're working for a big studio and you're told, right, you've got 3 months, guys, to get this book out of the door, well, it's a different thing completely. You right. know, but, you know, this is, you know, like most of us sort of small press indie guys, you know, a lot of the stuff we do is a labor of love, isn't it, ultimately?
Oh, yeah. You're not in it for the money. If you are, you need to go take a remedial math class.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Boy, that was something I was going to ask you. I just forgot completely. Oh, wait. So we are not doing crowdfunding on this project. This is all traditional. We're, you know, put it together, then releasing it without any kind of Kickstarter or GoFundMe or any of that stuff.
Yeah. When it comes to those things, I've made my peace with the fact that I've become the old man yelling at the kids to get off his lawn. I kind of don't like to talk about it much because the couple times I have brought it up, other people that obviously, you know, because I have a lot of friends who are doing Kickstarter and they're like, hey, no, it's fine. And I'm like, yeah, it is. I mean, mostly it's me.
and we had the conversation, didn't we, Chuck? You know, because obviously I'm in the back of the Extreme Earth Kickstarter, which was a success. So I just presumed straight away, oh, yeah, it's going to be a Kickstarter. And then it's like, no, okay, let's not do it that way. Let's go the traditional way. And, you know, I'm sure it'll work.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We don't need to linger on that. I just, you know, everyone's doing Kickstarter these days, and you're not, so it was noteworthy. Although I think people are starting to kind of sour on it to some, at least small extent.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a different beast, right? And so I think, you know, the dust is kind of still settling. It is somewhat odd to me. Like, it's especially jarring when you see a company like Steve Jackson Games doing a Kickstarter. It's like, wait, yeah. You guys have all the access to the print channels that you could ever want. What are you doing?
At that point, it's pretty much about exposure. I mean, look at companies like Savage Worlds, Pinnacle Entertainment Games. They don't need to do Kickstarter, but when they do, they're usually wildly successful and end up reaching new audiences.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's Kickstarter, and we're not using it. So coming out sometime next year,
early next year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the goal? Yeah.
All right. Cool. How long you figure it's going to be?
Oh, well, I'm like, I tell you what, it's like being interviewed by Piers Morgan.
So. well, I mean, because sometimes Chuck writes long books that you can use to, you know, deflect bullets, and sometimes he writes, you know.
Yeah.
Have we got a page count, Chuck, roughly?
Currently, the book is 132 pages.
Okay, now that's prior to art, so you're probably looking somewhere in the high 100s, low 200s by the time you get art and layout done.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. And writing continues. Character generation is locked down. Experience is locked down, which actually took me a lot longer, because another thing that's that AZ does that most games don't do is you're not getting XP for killing monsters. I definitely wanted to not reward combat, and I tried not to reward it at all. But I wound up, my players finally got me to give a little bit of ground because I had, control F. Hold on, I'm going to bring something up in the book here so I can actually give real information. The way the XP table was initially structured was that you were getting XP from nothing but time. The only thing that mattered was how long you had survived. And so that initial kind of pure concept, in the light of reality, it's been modified some, because then you have issues with everyone basically being the same level because you've all basically survived the same amount of time. Yeah. So as it is now, there's still a time component to it, because I think that's actually important to emulate the genre that I'm going for. But you are also getting bonus XP for if you find a secure shelter for the majority of a week, if you find a week's worth of rations, you get bonus XP. If one of your disadvantages activates, you get bonus XP because you learn something about yourself. And then I had a thing in there that if you used your skills, you got some bonus XP for the week. And what I had meant by that in my head was if you use engineering to build something or if you use medicine to heal a survivor. And my players were like, okay, Chuck, come on. This makes no sense. What about the skill that I used when I shot that thing in the face? And so finally I was like, okay, yes, that one little, you know, extra D10 of bonus experience can also include combat.
Yeah.
I wanted to not reward combat at all. I really wanted that.
You know, that to me, that was a big selling point of the game. When I was reading the manuscript that Chuck sent over, that element of being rewarded XP for the length of time you survived, I think is a big selling point for the system. You know, it's an unusual way of awarding XP. And even though, like you say, you've minimized that slightly, you know, just to still have that element there, I think is really, really good selling point.
Yeah, well, and again, like I said, that aspect of the game is really important, and it was kind of hard for my players to wrap their heads around, but I really had to hold firm on that, because if you look at, for example, the George Romero movies and The Walking Dead, and this is something they definitely have in common, is that the goal of the characters is to either hide or run, which of course is a very realistic take. Like if no matter how much ammunition you have, if you're outnumbered, say 100 to 1, which means in the United States there's, you know, 297 million of them and 3 million of you, you don't have enough ammunition to shoot everything you see. And so the realistic response to that is to try to wait it out, to try to find a safe place. So it's a balance of, I want to emulate that. I want to allow the players to, because in a game like D&D, for example, hiding in a castle, like letting your enemy besiege a castle that you're in, is a terrible idea because you're using resources and getting nothing in return. As opposed to when you're exploring, when you're attacking, you're gaining things. You're not only gaining potentially items, but you're also gaining experience from things that you kill and getting more powerful. Whereas when you stand still in D&D, you're getting less powerful over time. So I wanted there to be that motivation to, okay, we're going to go get a bunch of supplies, we're going to fortify this building, and then we're going to stay there through the winter. And at the end of that winter, we actually might come out more powerful than we were when we went in.
Yeah. Interesting. Hey, that brings up another question. Is it all modern kind of timeline, or could you do your zombie apocalypse in the medieval time or Roman times if you wanted?
No, it definitely, the game definitely assumes that this is happening today. Because the starting point of your character is your background. And when I say starting point, I mean that, like, your base ability scores are going to be vastly different if you're a lawyer than they are if you're a soldier. You kind of have to pick a setting there. And then the equipment section, there is some older things in there like bows and crossbows, but mostly it's lots and lots of guns.
So Chuck, what's the incentive say? So if you're a player and you're choosing a character background to play, I mean, the temptation to go for something like a soldier or law enforcement, someone who can handle themselves, is going to be paramount. So what's there to make someone choose a background of, say, a lawyer or, a mechanic or whatever?
Well, the game has... The game has lots of different things that it's tracking that you can use to survive. So, for example, the combat in the game actually can have some pretty nasty side effects. Like if you get shot, you might survive the hit points fine, but the game is going to track you very much might get an infection. And so medical skills obviously would be handy. In terms of like why you would want to be a mechanic, the game has a very robust crafting system in it. So if I'm using a gun, there's a chance every time I fire it that the condition of that gun is going to degrade. And so how do I repair it? Well, the first thing I need to do is get some parts. And parts are kind of the crux of the crafting system. You find other items and you can break them down. And there are several skills that will let you do that. There's a skill called scrounging that will actually, mostly all it does is it lets you break anything down into its component parts. And so breaking down a gun, its parts type would be small arms. And if you broke down a vehicle, then its parts type would be vehicles. And then if you need to repair a vehicle, then you need vehicle parts. And then there are a couple skills that you could use to repair something. So, not only are you going to want to potentially build new things, such as fortifying a building that you're in, which would be covered by the engineering skill, but you're also going to need to break down items around you into parts so that you have the raw materials to make what you need. Now, in terms of why you might want to be, like a lawyer, well, a lawyer character might have a very high leadership score. And so something else that the game tracks is each character has their own kind of individual mental health, which the game calls mental toughness, which is just like hit points. Like if one of the more dangerous zombies in the game is called the Little Devil, and that's actually a zombie child. And when you're low level, because obviously you get more jaded and more world weary as you gain levels, but when you're low level, just seeing a little devil inflicts mental damage on you because it's a undead child, and that's a terrible thing. And then killing one inflicts more mental damage on you. So those types of zombies are not physically threatening, but then when you lose mental toughness, you can suffer a mental breakdown, which can actually you're rolling on a table. It's basically the mental equivalent of a critical hit or an injury, and you might start binge eating, which kind of seems silly, but with food being very scarce, that's a terrible thing. Or you might decide you need to go see your old house where your wife died out of sentimental reasons, and you just take off by yourself into the night.
Not good.
And so, but then as a group, there's one more stat called unity, which is how well the group gets along. And it actually tracks like, not just how you fight together, but having a low unity will make the group not fight as well together. But it also tracks things like you're arguing all the time. And if you're arguing, then your mental toughness is not healing because you're under stress even when the zombies aren't around because of that asshole over there, you know, that you're stuck with. And so a character like a lawyer who would tend to have a higher leadership, that character might be better at keeping the group together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Chuck, you're going to hate me for making this next statement, but this almost sounds a little narrativist.
Maybe, sure. I don't think that's a terrible word. Like, to me, and again, this is just because I'm an old-fashioned guy, if you tell me that your entire game is about which of the maids gets to marry the master, I'm just like, get the fuck out of here. What are you even talking to me about? On the other hand, if you are not just, I really kind of have come to dislike about D&D that all groups of player characters kind of move like these super well-oiled special ops machines, that it's always, okay, we've got a tank and we've got a healer, and the tank's going to go over here and the healer's going to go over here. And when you read stories, they're never like that. Or even like realistic accounts, people don't like each other, especially when they're thrown together against their will.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So a typical session of After Zombie, would it be, you know, we're making a supply run down to the old abandoned Walmart, or, you know, it just deals with those 3 hours, or is it more like, okay, for the winter, you're stuck in the warehouse, and, you know, here's what happens?
Generally speaking, if you were stuck in a warehouse for the winter, and you weren't going to go anywhere, I would hand wave that time. Mm-hmm. The players would get some experience, but generally speaking, there's two types of missions, I would say adventures, that you can encounter. Something can come to you. You're holed up. You're safe. You have plenty of food. Well, you know, if your friendly neighborhood cannibal happens to notice that someone's living there, he might be like, huh, there's food there, and also maybe some canned food. But, you know, I prefer the fresh kind of my fellow human beings, so I'm going to go try to root them out. Or then there's the other kind where, you know, definitely the kind of counterbalance to, well, if we can just stay here and get experience, then why don't we stay here? Well, the answer is the game also tracks you need a certain amount of food every day. You need a certain amount of water every day. I kind of break those down into abstract. Every food item in the game gives you rations. And so you need one ration of food a day. And so, you know, you are going to be motivated to get out there. And also, again, you're going to want to go, you know, maybe the local highway. It's an impossible traffic snarl, but that also then is a resource. The players can go and break it down for mechanical parts that they need to, you know, to get their generator going, for example.
Okay, well, cool. How has playtesting been going?
Playtesting's been going really good. I've been running it since probably about January, the players are still. I've been keeping a careful rein on time. I'm actually starting to let them kind of jump ahead, you know, find some large caches of resources so I can just hand wave some time because I want to test out the experience system. That's actually kind of been benefiting them. But it's been going good. They don't like each other. Their unity as a group is kind of low. They had some setbacks. One of them has had a nervous breakdown and just wants to run from every zombie he sees.
That's a good idea.
That's not a fun guy to have in the group. Are you running into any of the classic zombie survival strategies and having to defeat them, like a guy who wants to hole up in the Walmart for the whole time, or?
No, I would say the kind of disconcerting thing that I'm coming across is one of the adventures I ran. The players got a radio message from a group of kids who were trapped in their school, and their first reaction was, "Why do we care?" And I was like, "Wait, what?" And they were like, "Kids? That sounds like people who are useless to us and are still going to need food." And I was like, "Oh man."
What's the mortality rate been like from a player's point of view?
Sorry, say that again.
What's the mortality rate been like from a player's point of view? I mean, is it quite brutal? Has it been a lot of player death?
No, there's been some close calls. There's been some injuries, but they built their group fairly well. They've got a character who's pretty good at combat, who her favorite weapon is a crossbow, and then they've got a character who is a doctor, and then they've got a scrounger. So they're a pretty good group, and they've been playing it pretty smartly. One of the skills in the game that I very much like, which my players immediately locked onto and realized was a serious survival strategy for them is a skill called distraction. Now, you can obviously use that against against humans, but the dumber the target is, the easier distraction becomes. And so, obviously, the zombies, anytime my players encounter a large group of zombies, especially since they have this one character who's super skittish now, they will have him, the two-player characters still kind of have their wits about them, will quietly exit the vehicle that they've been using and get good combat positions, and then the character who wants to run anyway will lay on the horn in the car and tear ass away, and he's gotten good at his distraction skill, and so he winds up drawing a lot of the zombies behind him.
Cool.
And so the distraction skill actually, you know, but then you can use it on other people, and it actually works with things like suppression fire is actually a function of the distraction skill, to where you're making the other character just like want to hide and cover.
So could you do the old Shaun of the Dead distraction, like do the zombie walk and groan down the street?
Yes, potentially. Sure. Yeah. Although more often it's either you're drawing the enemies toward you, or then there are like if you had some kind of device like say firecrackers, you could set them off and draw the enemies in that direction potentially, and then obviously you can also use it. Again, with regards to gunfire, you can scare enemies and drive them away from you. So it really gives you the ability to influence what your opponents do on the battlefield. You know, depending on what your circumstance is, if you're good at the distraction skill, you can either try to make them dig in, or you can try to flush them from cover and make them run.
Now, Chuck, with the way that the game is structured, or does the setting automatically assume North America, or can you go to some place like the Philippines or a zombie outbreak in Iraq or the Congo or anything like that?
You would have to tweak it some. The assumption is that it's North America. Now, the general way that expresses itself in the game, I would say. Because the modern world is, you know, there are lawyers everywhere, for example. So the backgrounds, I think, would probably work anywhere in the world. I put together some nice old school treasure tables where it's like, this is the odds that you'll find a certain kind of gun on a military base. This is the odds that you'll find, you know, a certain type of gun at a police station. And so obviously that the chances of finding like a FNFAL are going to be greater in Europe than they would be here.
Look at Chuck dropping the deep gun knowledge.
Oh, right. Oh yeah. Hey, he's been reading a few books, hasn't he?
Walt, do you know what that gun is?
Yes, I do.
John, do you know what that gun is?
Yes, I do.
Aid?
I do, because I've used it in Battlefield.
There you go.
All right. Well, I feel like a huge pussy then, but we'll just go on. So, Chuck, tell us a little about the setting. I mean, do you have what they call them in World War Z, Lamos, last man on earth kind of guys who held up? And you mentioned cannibals, so I'm guessing you have the occasional cannibal cult. Do you have weird post-apocalyptic religious groups, or you know, groups of military-style survivors? What's the world of After Zombie like?
Yeah, I not so much religious. I have thought about that. I'm very aware of you know, I try not to offend people. You know, cannibals is easy. I think we can all come out and say that we're anti-cannibal.
Really? Okay.
I am an atheist, and so I try to be a very very tolerant of my fellow human beings who believe in the invisible man in the sky. So no religion yet, although that makes sense. I do have, there's a group in the game called the Remnant, which, they portray themselves as, what's left of the United States Army. And so they are running around saying, look, I don't see any politicians around, so we're the government. You guys should all follow us. And a lot of the survivors are like, fuck you.
All right, cool. So you mentioned we're mainly set in the U.S. Do we get too much into Canada or Mexico, or are there any breakaway republics, like, you know, someone out west decides to say, screw you, I'm the governor of Colorado and Arizona or anything like that?
The setting so far is I've been running a game set in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, and so it's on a smaller scale than that. Although there is a gentleman who has taken over the local mall, and he has managed to seal it up and get all the zombies out, and he's running around calling himself the mayor, the mayor of the mall.
Is the only inhabitant there?
No, he's not. Of course, once he got it cleared out, and he didn't do that by himself. He had a rather well-armed group of guys with him, and so he cleared it out. And if you pay him, currency in the game, I should say, is cans of food. That canned food is the currency of the game. So if you were to pay him 4 cans of food, you could come in there and you could stay for a couple of weeks.
Sounds like a good place.
Or you could go into trade, right? And mostly that's a mall town, as it's called, is a focus of trade in the setting. But then they have, you know, there's a group that my players have encountered that they're not really sure what to make of them, but they definitely seem to be military. They're well-armed. They move in small groups. But what they seem to be doing is buying, like, cultural treasures. Like, when my players met them, they were looking for the Constitution.
Huh. Well, that's an interesting twist. Like, they're
right.
Set up after, you know.
And most people just seem, and my players, you could count them, they just kind of looked at them confusedly and were like, you can't eat that. And these guys are just like, yeah, I know.
It's extra credit for history class down at the community college. So, you know, something, this is a bad question, but I'm going to ask it. Non-human zombies?
No. There are animals in the game that you can encounter that are affected by the zombies, but in a more grounded way. Like, there are no zombie dogs like you would find in Resident Evil, for example. But there are dogs called devil dogs that the presence of the zombies has both made them not afraid of humans, but also it's made them a bit antagonistic toward humans, because the dogs don't really comprehend the difference between a living human and an undead human, and so they just know that a lot of humans they run into now are actually trying to bite them, and so but then they also know that they can bring those slow zombies down, and that they're good eating.
Yeah.
So no herds of zombie cows, alas. Okay.
One of my favorite groups in the game, though, is a group called the Beasts of Burden, and they are actually enslaving the zombies. And so they run around in wagons being pulled by a team of zombies that are chasing, like, some meat on a stick.
Well, that is trippy. So, is there any kind of end game in your zombie setting? People finally find the cure, or is that really kind of beyond the scope of the game? More, we're focusing on recreating, you know, a typical zombie movie or zombie novel.
Yeah, it's certainly beyond the scope of the game at this point. But as I said in the GM chapter, I am going to talk people through that, and I'm definitely going to encourage them. Once the players get beyond focusing on basic survival, which has yet to happen in my game. But when they do get to that point, you need to know how it works. And it needs to be, and you need to decide that, I would say, up front, because when they do start trying to figure out how the virus works and figure out if they can cure it, it needs to be consistent with what they've seen.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, neat. I look forward to seeing this, and I guess we're playing it next Thursday, so I'll get to see it pretty soon.
Yes.
Hey, you've been kind of quiet. You have any questions? Comments?
I don't think so. The only thing I can think of that I think was particularly cool, have you seen the Mythbusters zombie episode?
No.
They did a Mythbusters zombie special, and they actually kind of worked out the population density of the zombies in an area that you'd have to run through, depending on the size of the city. They could give you this is the amount of zombies you'd run through in 100-yard radius if you were running through somewhere in Seattle, and it was like that, and that kind of gives you just kind of how kind of densely packed these guys would be in, and obviously the further you go out, the less zombies there are, the less kind of chance of you running into these clusters of zombies should be.
Right.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think at times you forget just how many, it's like, if I look, say, on my street out my window, you just see rows of houses, but it's empty. You might see the odd person walking. But if you imagine everyone comes out of their house at the same time and stands on the streets, you get an impression of just how many people there are around you at any given time, you know.
Because that was one of the things that bugged me about the World War Z movie, when they attacked the place with the walls, is there was seemed to be way too many zombies for the amount of population that should be in the general area. There's a few cities around here, the rest of it's desert, but all of a sudden there's 15 billion zombies outside.
And that is World War Z was not a very good movie. a lot of it comes down to that.
Let's say that, I mean, just to judge what you're saying, your approach seems to be, because you're functioning more on the survival aspects of the thing, you're not doing like the, okay, right, off we go, what are we doing today? Right, we've got to go and mow down 35 zombies so we can get the experience for it to go next level. You're more focused on the other things to do. So if a group of five zombies are dangerous enough to kind of render a half of your team in trouble, then these kind of large numbers aren't really needed, are they?
My players definitely when they finally, you know, debated and rolled their eyes and decided to save all of those trapped fifth graders in that elementary school. Their response: there were a couple hundred zombies outside. They used their distraction skill and drew the vast majority of them, you know, a few miles down the road. And so that is typically their method of crowd control. And if you think about it, also, like, the game, like, it tracks movement. I would say I had to kind of compromise realism for round-to-round movement, just so it felt right. I had this idea in my head that, okay, you can only move, a round is a tenth of a minute. So that's 6 seconds. So how far could you move in 6 seconds? Okay, so like maybe 4 feet. And so players were moving like 4 feet around, and it was just ridiculously slow paced. So I actually had to up the movement considerably. But even with that, you know, the players, especially if they're fighting typical shambler slow zombies, they are able to, you know, it's more about kind of managing their surroundings than it is having trouble killing them in a way. Unless, again, the numbers are huge, which my players definitely seem aware that, you know, that would be bad.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, this has been about an hour. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up the podcast?
I was just wondering if Chuck is a big fan of Zombie Go Boom.
I am unfamiliar with that.
It's a bunch of guys that are originally were like film students, and they take real world weapons and test them against ballistic gel dummies set up like zombies.
Interesting.
So, yeah, you see them on YouTube. They caught my attention when they used the knife maker in the United States, Cold Steel. And they came out with something called the Brooklyn Smasher. It's a carbon fiber and a polypropylene plastic baseball bat. It's basically indestructible. And they put it against a ballistic gel zombie dummy, and the results were interesting. So I started checking out the rest of the videos, which include Spartacus swords, chainsaws, your toilet lid. So I just wondering if you'd seen it.
Yeah, they're on YouTube.com/show/zombiegoboom.
Oh, this is so much fun.
I'm going to have to check that out. I've definitely been doing a lot of crazy research. I keep waiting for the FBI to knock on my door.
I've been having to look at photographs of decomposing bodies. I was drawing a zombie thinking, right, okay, what would it look like if this guy didn't have a jaw? Oh, dear. Time to go on YouTube. Photos of man with no jaw, you know, and it's just horrible. It's like, God, you know, but, you know, you've got to do these things.
Yeah, exactly.
They have a Zombies versus Ninjas show on Zombie Go Boom.
Oh, it's awesome. So tragically awesome. I think my favorite, though, is they bring in this guy that's just I don't know, I've... They get him to trash a zombie head with an Xbox.
Nice.
It's just wrong in so many ways.
I did watch the Ultimate Warrior episode where they did vampires versus zombies. I think it actually made me stupider to watch that. Like, I could feel my IQ going down. But to me, like, they were thinking about it all wrong. Like, they kept, like, saying, well, the vampire has claws, so he could kill this many. And I'm like, no, the vampire can drive, damn it. He would find a truck.
He can turn into a bat and fly away and various other escape strategies, yeah. So... Well, I wish you hadn't told me about this, Walt, because I'm looking at the chainsaw versus the machete episode.
Oh my God! Yeah, I know. It's. I mean, every once in a while, if you're having a bad day, you put on Zombie Go Boom, you walk away laughing, and things are better.
Double-headed battle axe test.
Oh my God! Yes.
Yeah. So Chuck, you're gonna have ninjas in your game. You said ninjas in your game.
So one of the ways one of the things the game does is it's actually kind of hard to learn new skills just kind of on your own through practice. So it might take you several levels to learn a skill, but then you can find books that will teach you a certain skill. And one of my players, they investigated a library specifically because they were looking for books to pick up some new skills, and he immediately, like, he off the top of his head knew the name of this book. Now, he'd probably looked it up before the game started, but I still wanted to reward him. And it was basically a real book about ninjutsu. And so he found the book and immediately wrote down on his character sheet, "Is a ninja." And so he is in the process of studying this book, trying to pick up the stealth skill, basically.
It wasn't written by Ashita Kim, was it?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Okay, so he's make sure that after he reads the book and acquire the skill, that when he tries to use it, it fails every time.
I was going to say, if he could learn ninjutsu from books, there's like three guys I knew in high school who would be ninjas by now.
Right.
Well, obviously, it's practice and trial and error. Like, for example, again, since your XP is largely coming from time, then if you fail to learn the skill when you hit second level and you're assumed to still be working on it through fourth level, which is your next chance to learn a skill. So that will be, that could be several weeks. So it's assumed that you're reading the book to get some tips, and that improves your chance to learn the skill, but by no means does a book mean, like, okay, automatically I have the skill.
Okay, well, that seems reasonable. Well, hey, and we're all coming back next Thursday, and we'll We'll play test and see how it goes.
Awesome.
Now, Chuck, could we be a group of ninjas at a martial arts convention when the ninja virus hits? All right. Not a ninja virus, a zombie virus. Ninja virus is a very different thing.
Like, if you guys want to be cosplayers, I can start you out as cosplayers.
I don't like a cosplayer survival odds in the zombie apocalypse, frankly.
Really? Weird.
Well, because I can be dressed up like Naruto, but I don't have any of those skills he has in the cartoon. I mean, I just put my 19-month-old in a Superman outfit yesterday. He can't.
I saw that.
Yeah. He can't fly. I tried. His mom got me. I was like, you are the last son of Jor-El. And she, we're in counseling now. But, all right. Well, cool. Well, hey, we will talk to you next Thursday, Chuck, and we'll be ready to roll some dice. And holy shit, what kind of system are we using? Which of my dice should I break out of deep storage for this game?
You're going to need D10s.
D10s, two of them?
Yes.
All right.
More than two actually will be helpful at times, but at least two.
So it's a dice pool game, D100 game. How's it work?
It's D percent for skill resolution, including combat skills. But then there are times in the game, like a weapon might do 3d10 damage, that sort of thing.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, hey, pleasure talking to you as always, Chuck.
Same here. Yeah.
Everybody else, John, Aid, Walt, thanks for showing up to co-host.
No problem.
And we'll see you guys next time on the BAMF Podcast.